Something to Scotland lived really amongst the gay Afro-Caribbean community.
And that would be
1957. So it was in many ways a surprisingly open community. And I lived with a guy from Montserrat in Graham Road in Dalston, and his cousins lived nearby, and they just accepted me completely. He's my boyfriend, and I became one of their family. It was great. The people from Barbados were a bit more closety, and Trinidadians had a reputation for being bisexual rather than completely gay. But it was a totally different world. It was very, very strange. And I loved it, because I found where I lived in Boston Manor, it was snobby and, you know, provincial. And, these were completely open, natural people. They either liked you or they didn't, and they accepted you. I went to their parties, very nice weekend parties, straight parties. I used to dance with a boyfriend at straight parties.
Really?
57, yeah. And so that was tremendous. But then Black Panther arrived, and suddenly black people were not homosexual. That was white decadence, and they'd been infected by the white community.
And tell me how you came across Che and your involvement with that. Was that around the same time, or was that later?
No, that was later. I didn't come into contact with Che until 75, I think. I'd been a music teacher in night school, and I'd stopped. I'd done enough in 12 years, and looking for other things to do. And I just happened to notice that the local Che group met in my street a few doors up on a Sunday in the social services building. And I thought, okay, I'll go and have a look. And I went, and I thought, yes, this will do. This is nice. So I went along, and it was Islington Harringay, CHE. And they were always short of people of the committee, so they shoved me on the committee straight away. I thought, this is ridiculous, you know, the committee, it's anyway. And I was with them for, oh, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, I must have been, one way or another, doing almost everything on the committee. I was a very active group. I was a very, very busy group indeed.
What did you do? What did they do?
Well, the thing about CHE was that they had a double function. First of all, they were supposed to try and provide a community for local gay people. So you went there not to cruise, but to make friends, for the socials, and also to raise money, the head office for gay rights, and also to push gay rights in their local area. So they had plenty of things to do. And I must say, Islington Harringay did all of it. And they were very active and so on. And I was with them, I also was working for Switchboard and so on. And that got a bit hectic, and my life got very hectic. Because after I went to the big gay conference in Sheffield, I started wearing badges in Sheffield, which is fair enough. And then I went out work in the Manchester head office for a week. And that was interesting. And then I came back to London. I thought, no, I'll take the badges off. I cannot take the badges off. Otherwise, it proves to everyone I'm a liar and a hypocrite. Either you're wearing a badge saying, glad to be gay, you either are glad or you're lying. So I had to leave them on. So I was walking around where I lived, and I had a job in a record shop in Holloway Road, only 200 yards from where I worked, from where I lived. So everyone knew who I was, where I was, and I was gay, and just up from the police court as well, which interested the police quite a bit. And a local gang decided they wanted to kill me, to get rid of me. And seven of them. And it was the usual thing that they'd been failed by the education service. They were late teens. They'd been failed by the education service. They'd been failed by the community. They were the bottom of the heap, and they desperately needed to feel superior to someone. And at least two, if not three of them, were actually closet gay as well, which is why they decided to be so violent. They tried to smash the shop I was working, and he threw them out. And the threats continued for months and months. And but the mad thing was that one of the gang would come in before anything happened to tell me, to try and get me to say something that made being gay was smart and clever, then they could all come out. But I said, it doesn't work like that, you know, it's not, not the way life is. And
they'd want you to say what?
Well, you see, they're bottom of the heap, so if I could prove to them that being gay was clever and superior and something, I said, suddenly they weren't at the bottom of the heap anymore, they'd be somebody special. I see, there is no magic formula. You know, you just got to.
So the gay ones would come and warn you?
Yes, yes, they'd come to the shop and warn me, yes, well, two of them would anyway. And but then they used to drink in a pub not far from where I lived and where I worked as well. And they got drunk, it could get a bit hairier. And then one night I to get from Harlem Road to where I lived, I had to go around a couple of dark corners. And there were three of them, and they were drunk, and they had near a skip with large bits of wood in it, and they picked the wood out, and they said they were going to do this and that to me, but they were drunk, and I ignored them. And then a couple of weeks later, a friend was dropping me home. He said, can I just drop me from the Holloway Road? I said, it's okay, I'm going to go around a couple of corners. So I went around a couple of corners, all seven of them, about 20 foot in front of me, and they'd just gone out the pub, and they saw me, and it was, and I thought, this is it, I've got no options. So I took a deep breath and walked straight through them. And they parted and let me through. I was having no nonsense. I went straight through them, you know. And I just ignored them completely. When I went past, I had a big shout of shock. I crossed the road into my road and walked up the road. And I forced myself not to walk too fast, you know, but my ears were working overtime. Because if they'd wanted to kill me at that point, I had no defence. Seven fairly burly teenagers, you know. And so I got to my gate and looked back, and they hadn't followed me. And I went in to the front hall, and I had to lean against the wall, otherwise I'd fallen over. I was shaking so much. I could, sorry, it's still upsetting. Anyway, eventually I recovered. And I went upstairs to my flat, and they said they hadn't followed me. And that was the end of it. That was the end of it. Switchboard. Interesting. Tom Robinson was a member. I didn't know him then. I knew him later. Well, you never know what's going to turn up. The first phone call I got was American, and he said, what can you do in Rome on a Thursday night? So I said, oh, you're going to Rome? He said, I am in Rome. I don't know what to do tonight. I said, okay. That was a start. And anything could happen. You've got the heavy breathers, you've got the abusers, and or you've got the serious ones, or you've got the troubled ones, you've got the whole lot. You've got everything, you never know, and it picked up the phone. And you've got the suicides, of course, which I didn't get, fortunately. I know one of our members who did, and we did have a system to try and do something if we got a suicide call to try and save them. And the person other than the phone just would not go along any of those lines, and he just got quieter and quieter and just fell silent. And John was so upset, he had to take months off to recover. Yeah, so you got all that as well. And at that stage, the far right were also attacking us. I went in for a shift one evening, and there's puddles on the floor of switchboard and papers around the place and towels. I said, what is going on? The far right had got into the building, come up to switchboard, robbed the people there and running it, and they tried to set fire to it. And I got in just as they were cleaning up afterwards. So... And the far-right group, actually, they were very inefficient, fortunately. The switchboard phones were off for nearly an hour. But the far-right group then went to the East End, and they did actually set fire to a club, I was told there. I don't know the name of the club.
K-Club.
Yeah. The far-right were really quite rampant in those days. And but you get some very twisted people. I always remember, this didn't happen to me, but it happened to someone I knew there. Kept getting phone calls saying, I know where switchboard is, and when you come out from your shift, I'm going to throw a bucket of acid over you. And he went downstairs and he opened the door, and there's a guy out there with a bucket who threw the liquid contents of the bucket all over him, and it was water.
Oh my God.
Oh, yeah. So he really got some. Yeah, it was quite tough. So I was coping with that, and coping with this gang who were trying to kill me and other things as well. So
dangerous times.
Oh yeah, that's right. But sometimes funny times as well, you know. And I think two of the calls I remember. One was perfectly trivial. The guy from Hampton, what's the time? So I told him. I said, why are you phoning me for the time? He said, because I know you're always there. I'm sorry, not usually so emotional. Another was from a fairly elderly lesbian whose partner had gone away for Christmas and left her with plenty of food and stuff. On her own, she was disabled. And she hadn't spoken to him for 3 days and had terrible times getting through to us. She phoned, I think, Directory of Inquiries and asked her number, and they refused to give it to her.
Really? I've never heard. That's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, it wouldn't tell her.
Was that common? Did that happen?
I'd never heard it. Same time I ever heard it, but that was...
Must have got someone homophobic answering.
Yeah. And so anyway, we had a long chat, and I said, look, don't ever be lonely again. Here's some numbers you can phone from us. You'll be all right. And that was all right. That was good.
Important work.
But I wasn't that good purely on a phone. I much preferred face-to-face, really. That was... you've got body language to work with as well at that point. So what was all that going on, and that group? I had a breakdown. Not surprising, because one of the things when you join CHF, you suddenly get literature which has positive viewpoints. And suddenly I realised that I'd been diddled. All these lies have been told about me all these years. And I was coming up 40, and my youth had gone, and a lot of the best years of my life which I should have had, I didn't have. So I was extremely angry. And I tried to use anger in a positive way, because you can use anger to generate energy, which is good. So, and at that point, I had a breakdown, and I thought, well, I know what's caused it, so now reverse it and stop it. So I didn't go to medicine for doctors or tablets, I could do it myself, which I did, that took time. And London Friend had moved into Upper Street. And so I went to London Friend. And because they knew me as the local Che group member and so on, they thought I was just there just for as a Che group member. I wasn't, I was there for me. And I joined the men's support group.